Welcome back to the podcast. Today we have an awesome special guest. I mean, all the guests are awesome, but this one, we've been colleagues. We worked together. We've done a podcast together on his show. I think it was last year. I don't remember now. Last year. So it's been a while. But Connor O'Shea, he is a mobility and rehab coach for men over 30. Very excited to have you on the show, man. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me on, mate. Really excited to jump into everything with you today.
Yeah, it's going to be good. It's kind of it's different. We normally see each other every Monday on our team meetings, but now it's a little bit of one-on-one time, which is good. Cause I think I don't know like your backstory. Right. So I'd love to know mostly just, you can go as in depth as you want. It's your show, show now. What got you into fitness in the first place? Can you take us back?
Yeah, so I studied sport and exercise science in university. So when I left school, I wasn't entirely sure what I wanted to do, but I was very active athletically growing up, playing Gaelic games, so hurling and football. Hurling, for people to listening, is it's an Irish national sport in Ireland, and we play with sticks. So it's maybe a bit like hockey for people in Canada. Okay. Like more like lacrosse, I'd say. Yeah. So I played that a lot growing up, and then did sport and exercise science in university. Wasn't too, drawn to it. Was actually thinking about dropping out at one point, and then wasn't really sure what I was going to do. And sports science is kind of like an arts degree for kind of fitness and health. It was very vague. A lot of people were going into physiotherapy or, going into a master's or psychology. So then I just finished, came out. I wasn't, it was 2010. Ireland was not in a good place economically at that point. Recession wise, and then I decided to do personal training certification and started working as a PT for 2 years, and that was kind of it. Like I kind of really, once I started working with people then, and I think the big breakthrough, because as a sports science graduate I wanted to work with athletes, and then I started working with general population people. And I remember one of my male clients at the time, was struggling with depression. I had just mental health challenges his whole life, and he was saying how he had come off his medication, with the help of his doctor, but also through the consistent exercise and nutrition with me. And I could really feel the massive impact you can have on people with just nutrition and exercise. And athletes kind of take things for granted because they get everything for free, and then like a lot of people are like, wow, you've had such an impact on my life. So that was kind of the first I started getting like, okay, I can really feel the benefits of being a coach now. And that's basically been since 2011, but I took a break 2013 2015. I traveled, I lived in Asia for 2 years, and then I kind of reassessed a lot of things on that trip around what I was doing. I was quite burnt out before I left, had a lot of injuries. And that was when I started kind of thinking a lot differently about my approach to training, why I was getting these issues, and kind of got more into the mobility rehab side of things then. And that's kind of led me on the path I'm at today.
That's amazing, man. That's a great story. We share some similarities where I wanted to go to school to get my kinesiology degree. And I got there and I got in the program finally after years of trying to work towards it. And I got in, mm-hmm. and it was just like, it's all theory. The first year was the most boring. Like it had some benefits to it, but overall it was like, this is all stuff I'm not going to be using. Like it's not really giving me that practical application. I was into fitness. I liked it. And it was the same for me. It's funny. Cause like I became a personal trainer, I got my cert. I'm like, yeah, okay. So I'm gonna do this cert. And then once I get the degree, I'm going to get my, I have to get the degree to get, what is it? The NSCA, not CPT, but the next level up. Mm-hmm. CSCS. I was like, yeah, I'm going to get my CSCS. I'm going to train hockey players. I was like, I was like, I want to train hockey players. Cause I love hockey growing up, as as Canadians, this is what we do. But once I started working with Gen Pop, I was like, this is different. Like I love the game. I love the sport. But as you said, like we have such an impact on people's lives that I think you don't realize until it happens. Mm-hmm. And I think a couple of years went by and I'm like, I'm deep in this now. Like, this is what I want to do. I'm like, I'm not going back to school to get a degree to go after a CSCS when I'm on this path of helping people And it's just, it's general population. People just want to feel better. They want to move better. They want to eat better, maybe lose a little bit of weight, get strength. And it was great. And just, I got to connect with a ton of amazing people, but it's similar to you, is like, you love the sport, but you're like, wow, athletes are a different breed. I think coaching athletes is great. I don't want to nag on any coaches. Maybe you can agree or disagree, but like, it's arguably a little bit easier to coach an athlete because they're already highly driven individuals. Most of the time they're already talented, great body awareness, already have some background in exercise and nutrition, general population. It's almost like you're starting from scratch, which I love. I love to take someone from, it's almost like a fresh mold, and you can kind of shape them into what they want to do. What do you think?
Totally, man. Such a good point. Like, it's, you can see in the type of exercise I do now, it's kind of like movement, or like movement culture, a lot of it would be. And a lot of the people would be high level coaches, but they're training super motivated, extremely, you know, from an exercise ability level, they're in the top 5% globally. So from a skill, from a coaching skill point of view, I don't think that population is super hard to train, because they will run through walls. They'll train 2 hours a day, 6 days a week. They also, a lot of them will have, like, you know, gymnastics background, dance background. So just super driven people. So yeah, I'm the same, mate. Like, I love someone in their 40s or 50s, never exercise, actually don't like exercise, and now they are crushing it. Like, they're doing, like, I love getting, you know, female clients to do like things like chin-ups. I love working with people towards things like handstands, not because it's like the thing that everyone should be doing, but it just gives you that sense of body empowerment. Mm. Your body is this kind of vessel that's going to allow you to do the things you want to do in life. And learning skills like that gives you that confidence.
Yeah, I love it. And the amount of women that have said to me over the years, like, I want to do a push-up, I want to do a pull-up. And it's, I get it. Those are very, like, you want to be able to move your body however you want to. But I also argue, like, societal-wise, how many people on average do you think can do a full push-up, or even work like a full pull-up? Like, it's not a common thing at all. So it's like, for, especially for women to have, I'll call it a strength goal like that, I think it's huge. I think it's a very, you know, shifting point in where we're headed towards in fitness and health, and strength is being applauded in women, and they're not just being handed pink dumbbells all the time and said, go do thousands of reps of nothing kind of thing.
Totally. Yeah. And just, again, having that sense of confidence in your body's abilities to actually serve you, and also have those abilities cross over and help you in day-to-day life tasks. Because I was pretty strong in my kind of mid to late 20s with deadlifting, and then, you know, I was doing, like, you know, double body weight deadlifts, and good weight, like, to weight ratio with squatting. But, like, I was always injured, and I would, like, move a couch and I'd hurt my back. And it's like, well, what's the point being super strong just in the gym if it doesn't do anything in the real world, or look good, but you're always in pain or sore and you can't actually function for, like, you know, going hiking or hanging out or having fun, going on holidays, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, 100% agree. I'm at a point, it's the same. It's like, I don't care what my max strength is anymore. I don't even want to go test it. Like, I haven't done, I don't know how many full from the floor barbell deadlifts I've done over the past 2 years. It hasn't been very many, because it's like, if I got to go pick up my kid off the floor, I want to be able to do that comfortably. I don't want to be worried about a hinge, or like, is my back tender today from deadlifts? It's like, it's one of those risk to reward ratios where I think it's a sign of a good coach. I think if you can evolve how you see things, it can make you better, because there's a lot of coaches, I'm sure, and I was like this, where it's like, everyone has to do it one way, right? Barbell deadlifts, barbell squats, barbell bench, barbell this. Most people aren't suited or ready for barbell training at all.
You there, man? You jumped out for a second.
Yeah, freezer. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And, like, it's, you know, Josh Hillis?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he says, like, everything's population dependent or population specific. So, you know, if you're working with a powerlifting coach and you're going to him for powerlifting, then yeah, like, barbell work is important. But, like, I think what you were saying with a lot of general population people, just the mechanics, the, you know, the mobility, the strength, it doesn't really give them the results they're looking for by, you know, spending time trying to do, you know, perfect deadlifts from the ground or full depth squats initially, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's specificity for sure. What have you found now? Because I know now you're focusing more on working with men. What have you found the differences between when you were coaching women to how you're coaching men?
Yeah, I would say, and this is a generalization, you know, not everyone's the same, but generally men, well, actually this, there's research behind this, like women do better with volume. So overall women can do way more volume than men and will make, you know, make bits of men like with higher rep work, and they'll respond very well to it. This can be counterintuitive to a lot of male clients. It can just burn them out, increase injury risk, all of this. So the next point is kind of, I guess, linked to that. I find a lot of the female clients I worked with, they want more frequent variety, more changes in their programming. Mm. Whereas a lot of the guys can stick to stuff. You know, usually I'll update programs every 4 to 6 weeks. You know, if everything's fine, there's no injuries and they're progressing okay. But, you know, a lot of the guys can stay with stuff for, you know, 8 weeks, even sometimes 10 weeks, and they're okay showing up and just, you know, doing their repetition. Mm. I find the women do better with, in my experience, with more variety. So definitely updating it every month.
Mm-hmm.
And even maybe giving them more variety within their weekly workouts. That's one thing I have noticed over the last, you know, 11 years of coaching people.
Mm-hmm. You found that more of a challenge in terms of like watching them progress if they're like constantly asking for different varieties, you keep it somewhat similar, just a bit of a tweak on the exercise?
Yeah, I think this is the biggest challenge as a coach, like, is just keeping stuff fresh, but not just being like, here's a bunch of random stuff every week.
Yeah.
Just make you tired. So that's why I like skill-based coaching. And the way I explain it to people is like, let's just say you have 5 movement patterns, like a push, a pull, a squat, a hinge, and like a core exercise. And they're 5 separate ladders. And each step of the ladder is another progression of that exercise. So let's just say with the push ladder, the first step of that ladder is like a push up off the ground or off your knees, okay, mm-hmm. or push up against the wall. And then the top of that ladder might be like a planche or like a handstand push up or like a super heavy bench press. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, that's like elite. Most people won't get there, but we can progress people along the, you know, the pushing patterns. So they might be working on, you know, like, it's harder at the start because people just need to get the fundamentals down. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, let's just say someone has been training with me for 12 to 18 months. They have a pretty decent foundation. They can do the basics pretty well. We might, you know, every 4 weeks we'll update the push, but it might be just another variation on the ladder. So they might be doing like full strict push-ups this month. Next month they might be doing like dumbbell presses or something like that.
Mm.
And then they might start doing, you know, push-ups on the rings or more like ring-based exercises, which give them more stimulus. But it's essentially the same pattern that they're working on, but they're just going up to the next more advanced step along that ladder.
Mm.
And since I've moved to that model probably 5 years ago, people's compliance and excitement to train has gone through the roof. Because the hardest thing for me before, when I was just doing progressive overload with like strength training, people were like, you know, I'm doing what, like 50 kilos this week and then 52 and a half next week, like this is boring. It's not the, you know,
same. Yeah,
so it, you know, you can do a lot of different stimulus as well with that model, like tempo work, you know, rest periods, like density training, like on the minute, every minute, doing, you know, a certain amount of repetitions. But I found getting people, and also getting people to understand and educate them on the skill-based approach, is really cool, because you can be like, okay, look, you're working on this skill. This is like the first step, but the top of this ladder is like a handstand. So you're actually working on the first movement pattern towards that. And they're like, oh, wow, like I can see where this is going.
Mm.
And then we can get them like in 6 to 12 months, they're working pretty close to, they might be kicking up to a wall or something like that. They have the strength, mechanics, all that stuff to do it, because they have had the baseline patterns and they've just incrementally improved it over time.
That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, I've never thought of doing any training like that. I'm very much, for me personally, I'm a numbers guy. So if I know like progression for me is easier if it's laid out in numbers, like 3 sets of 8, mm-hmm. 3 sets of 10, and just in like that. Cause to me, I find it's easier for me to track. So that's kind of where I went with clients, of like, they just need structure. You know, half my roster are moms over 30, 35. And they just lack exercise structure and they don't know what to do at home or in the gym. So for me, it was like, let's just make it very simple. there's like maybe five, maybe six exercises per workout. And yes, that's typically all you need most of the time. You don't need to be doing 12 to 15 exercises a workout because it's just overkill. But keeping the variety can be tough, but it's also educating them that the more consistent you are with this workout pattern or this block of training, the more you'll see progress with that block of training. So it's like trying to get them away from, because my average client, usually they've tried a bunch of random workouts, they'll download Beachbody and it's a new thing every day or whatever it might be. So it's like just getting them to find the structure, then we can make the progressions that they need. But, you know, as we've been talking already, like everybody's different. I'm the type of person who, like, my coach will give me a block of training for 12 weeks. He's like, this is what you're doing. Maybe I have to make some tweaks here and there, but that's easier for me because I don't have to think. And he's not too worried about what else I'm doing in terms of like form or anything like that. So it's true. It's a specialization for the population, as you said.
Totally. Yeah. And I think it's also the level you're at. Like, it's just harder when you're like intermediate to upper, closer to advanced, and you have a lot of years under your belt. It's hard to, you know, progress, whether that's with more weight or with more like exercise complexity, like going to the next step on the ladder. So yeah, like I'd be the same, you know, I'm sticking to stuff for 8 to 12 weeks. It's like the same thing every week. Cause yeah. It's just, you know, it may be improving my tempo, my rep quality, but like, it just gets harder to progress. Like, it's hard to go from, you know, I don't know, a one arm chin up variation to another one arm chin up variation. Cause it's super hard versus on like my initial, you know, it's like beginner's gains. The first 12 months, like every month, you're just like blowing your PRs out of the water. It's the, for people listening, your first year of training will be the most exciting, just so you know, or at least you'll be getting the best results in the first year.
Especially if you do it right. Ready. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I miss that. I haven't had newbie gains in almost 20 years.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like if I could have a time machine for just a bit, just what it would feel like to just like blow up my lifts and just get all the results quicker. Cause you're right. I mean, the more advanced you are, there's less room for growth. And that's like, not that I'm comparing myself to Olympic athlete by any means, but they're training for years to shave off milliseconds, like sometimes in the sprints. So it's like the average person would see that and be like, that's not a big difference. But at that level, that's the difference between like a gold medal and in a fourth place sometimes. I think I just froze. Am I back?
You're back. You're back.
Okay. Love Zoom. But no, yeah, we're talking about, so you mentioned before we jumped on about frameworks. Now, is this kind of where the skill base comes from, or the frameworks come from that? Talk to me about that a little bit.
Yeah. I try and think about things on a more kind of, I don't know if macro is the right word, but just on a more global scale for people so they can kind of understand why they're in the position they're in. So I did a talk recently, it was in Bulgaria, and I broke it down into kind of five steps for people to focus on. So we had like environmental factors, movement, mindset, nutrition, and integration. So I just tried to make it super, so people could understand like why they're kind of in the position they're in. And, you know, the population I was talking to were all like online workers, remote workers, but like it kind of crosses over to pretty much everyone from people who are at a desk all day and just mostly sedentary. So like I can kind of give you a quick overview, a few of those things for people to maybe understand a bit more about maybe why they have aches and pains, tightness and restriction.
100%. Yeah, I'd love to hear the breakdown of them all.
Cool, man. The first one is like environmental. And this is what I was saying to you, like when I went traveling in 2013, I had all these injuries. I was really stiff and tight. And I moved to Southeast Asia for 2 years, and I started was teaching English, and then I got into yoga. I actually started teaching yoga there as well. But the really most interesting thing was just looking how people were living and how well people were moving. So people in their 60s, 70s, 80s were able to squat, you know, perfectly ass to grass. They were able to sit in the ground for long periods of time. And then here was I, like 27, and I could sit on the ground for like 60 seconds, and then my hip would start giving me pain, my back would be sore. And I was like, you know, why am I so bad at this? And everyone else here is like, they're amazing at just getting into better positions, you know? And then why is everyone from Ireland or, you know, a lot of Western culture super tight? They can't do these simple they seemed like simple positions and very, you know, I guess, fundamental positions like squatting, sitting on the ground. So it's very obvious that the reason that they're good at it is because they never stop doing it, you know. So for you, like seeing your kids moving, you can probably see like how well they move. And then as we go into school, we spend hours and days and decades in chairs, so our hip doesn't work through full range, our ankles don't work through full range, so then we just get good at not moving into those positions and we stiffen up and we tighten. Whereas in like Southeast Asian culture, there a lot of people are still using squat toilets, a lot of people are sitting on the ground for dinner. So again, you're just repeating stuff and you get good at what you repeat, whether that's sitting in chairs your whole life or sitting on the ground and moving in and out of full range through your hips. So that was kind of the first light bulb for me. And then I was living in that culture and, you know, practicing more ground sitting, practicing more squatting. And instead of doing it, you know, bits and pieces in an hour session, three or four times a week, I was spending a lot of my day in these positions. And then my hips just started opening up massively. And then I could sit, you know, on the ground for, you know, 30 minutes and 60 minutes. So this is kind of what I get to clients to understand as well about everything, is like you get good at what you repeat. And if you are on autopilot mode in our culture, you are going to just be sitting sedentary and probably eating all the wrong things. So you need to bring awareness first of all and actually try and change these patterns. So the first thing is literally just more movement. So more steps is the first basic step people can do, you know, getting out of your chair every 30 to 60 minutes and looking at how many steps you're doing on a daily basis and adding 1,000 to 2,000 steps a day. And just trying to be like, okay, I'm doing 5,000 steps a day on average at the moment. Let's try and do 6,000 or 7,000 going forwards. And then just getting to understand like this stuff will really compound over the next few years and decades, because it's, you know, the way it's going is not going to be ending in a good place if you just stay in that regular Western model. And then the second thing is to, you know, change how you sit. So you might spend some time standing, you might spend some time sitting like I am now, and then you might spend some time sitting on the ground. And then like ground sitting can be really uncomfortable at the start, so you can do some, you know, hip mobility drills to make that more accessible as well. So that's kind of the first thing, like the environmental side of things. And then that kind of goes into the second framework around movement and like how we are sitting now. It promotes you lengthening the muscles in your upper back, tightening the muscles in the chest and the front of the body. So you get this kind of rounded position. And then you know, have you ever caught yourself in this position? You're like, oh my God, I'm on my phone and I'm just like looking down. You
literally just really described how I'm sitting right now. Yeah. For anyone listening to this. Yeah. What Connor just said is exactly how I'm sitting. It's just, that's the pattern I've been in. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And then all of a sudden your upper back is weak, your chest is tight. So going into the gym and doing loads of benching is just going to pull you further into that position. And that's what I did when I was, you know, 18 to 22. And I was just, you know, benching 3 times a week. And then I was like, why do my shoulders hurt? You know, why do my elbows hurt? So it's just, you know, the easiest framework for people to understand with programming and how they should be using their workouts is like stretch the front side of your body and strengthen the back side of your body. So really focus on things that are going to focus on like horizontal pulling in particular. It's going to pull your shoulders back into balance. And then instead of like just thinking about being upright, you're naturally going to sit in a more upright position because your upper back has the strength to pull yourself back into a correct position. And then, you know, things like strengthening your glutes with things like deadlifts or hamstrings as well is just going to help that more upright position, instead of, you know, trying to think about it all the time and forget after 60 seconds, the muscles actually sustain your position in space. And then stretching the front of the body, so stretching in particular the pecs, the chest area, the hip flexors, and really making sure that your programming is prioritizing those movement patterns. It's going to offset a lot of the kind of modern day issues that we have. So that's like the easiest program in the world, and that's why I'm not a big fan of things like high intensity training a lot of the times, because it's a lot of burpees and push-ups, and they're kind of just doing more of those movements, which is a lot of times exasperating pre-existing.
Yeah, and I mean, we can go on a whole other tangent about high intensity exercises, but no, I mean, one thing I've loved and I've learned over the years jacking up my own shoulders and doing just a lot of reading on the subject is programming more of the backside of the body, because like my brain's blank right now, posterior chain for clients. I love loading up glute exercises, hamstring it, lots of rowing, lots of pulling, face pulls, just because I feel like most people that come to me are exactly what you described. We sit all day. There's a few exceptions that I have, like nurses and things like that, where they're constantly moving. But I'd say the majority of people also don't feel too good because of just their daily posture of how they're sitting. As I talk to you right now, my shoulders continue to just roll forward. And it's like, for me, it's always been a question of like, is it structural in my, like in my body, or is it that combination of like, no, I've been bench pressing way too much for too long in my youth, where I've just like developed that tight pec. But yeah, I think posterior chain is still, I think it's still overlooked for a lot of people. I think they don't think about it, mainly because it's not what they see, right? Everyone wants to know, you know, how to flatten their stomach or bigger bench press if you're an 18 to 25 year old male, typically. Bigger arms because you can see them. But it's like, well, what about your glutes? What about your hamstrings? But I love that you said that. It's like strengthen the back and stretch the front, which is, it makes it so simple when you put it that way, because it makes a lot of sense, because the front, we're always tight, and the back, we're always weak. Yeah. Did you come up with that? That's something that you kind of learned about over the years.
Yeah, no, I definitely didn't invent that. Like Dan John talks about this, the tonic and phasic muscles from, I think it's Yanda, Dr. Yanda's work. And that's just a fantastic lecture. Like Dan John, for people who don't know him, he's probably the biggest legend in the fitness industry. You know, he's written like 9 books. I'm always talking about just how awesome he is. And he, you know, he's coached me for 40 years, but basically he says like the phasic muscles, the tonic muscles, I'm not sure which is which, but basically most of the muscles that get tight and weak are, I think, the phasic muscles, and then the reverse is the tonic muscles, which, you know, in a really simplistic term would be the backside of the body are the muscles that tend to get weak and lengthen, and then the front side of the body are the weaks that tend to get tight and restricted. So we need to address those, and it's just a really simple framework for people. Like, okay, am I like, what have I done today? I've done bench press, I've done one arm press, I've done push-ups, I've done bicep curls. Maybe you should start adding in some stuff that is going to target the backside of your body.
Yeah, you know, 100%. That's and why I also, like,
no, sorry, go on.
No, go ahead.
I was just saying, like, the posterior chain, like, learning something like a hinge can be very challenging. It's actually one of the most challenging exercises I find that people have, especially guys, to teach them. And then a lot of the work I do as well is teaching people how to actually understand how to utilize their scapula and actually understand what's going on here. Like, because there's a massive disconnection between what we do with the backside of our body, because it's just, we can't see it, we don't know how to move it, we don't know how to move our scapula independent of our elbows as well. Everything we do tends to be bending at the elbow as well. And if there's restriction through your scapula, which basically everyone has, a lot of times it'll overload your elbow, and then you start getting things like tendonitis in your elbow because it's being overloaded, because your scapula isn't doing its work, or the lats aren't doing the work. But the thing is, you kind of need a coach to teach you this stuff. Like, it's very hard to understand how to, you know, bring back proper movement and connection into the area of the scapula and the upper back. But once people get that and they start understanding how to recruit that area when they're doing upper body pulling and pushing, I mean, they get way stronger and their injury risk goes way down.
Yeah, I love that. I didn't realize the scapula was that, like, had that big of a role in elbow pain. I never made that connection.
Super interesting, mate. It's just like, again, it's not doing its job, and then the pain's being referred down, or the load's being referred into the elbow that's getting overloaded, and it's kind of like the scapegoat, like maybe like the lower back or the knee as well.
Yeah, I was just gonna say the knee to the hip. So that's the second part of the framework is movement.
Next is just like a simple, like, two mindset tips. Again, this is from Dan John, one of them, and the other one's from James Clear. And it's just kind of managing expectations. So Dan John says, out of 5 workouts on average, 1 will be awesome, 1 will be terrible, and 3 will be okay. And it just kind of allows you to manage expectations, because especially I find a lot with new clients, they're like, oh, you know, I feel like, you know, maybe I'm not progressing as quickly. And then you talk to them and they might have had one or two bad days. And you could probably cross this over just to, you know, nutritional habits as well. But like most of the time, things aren't going to feel awesome. You're just kind of showing up, ticking the box and getting it done. You know, a fifth of the time it'll probably feel good, and a fifth of the time it'll feel rubbish. But 60% of the time, it's kind of just, I don't even know if I can't, like, was this a good workout or not? Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure, you know. Yeah. So when you kind of explain that to clients, they're like, ah, okay. And then it allows them to show up more consistently and not feel like, oh, I need to feel awesome to train, otherwise I'm doing something wrong. So I found that to be really helpful for managing expectations. And then the second one is from James Clear, which is don't miss twice, which, like, you know, if you say, okay, I'm going to cut out sugar, or I'm going to train every day, and then you just inevitably miss that day because 100% compliance is pretty much impossible. A lot of the times people are like, oh, it's Thursday, I missed today, screw it, I'm going to have a huge weekend, and then I'll get back on the wagon on Monday. Mm. And then they get come to Monday and they're like, oh my God, I've ruined everything. I'm just going to start in February or January. Or, yeah. You know, and then don't miss twice. It's just like, okay, I missed Thursday. Well, I just won't miss Friday. You know, or yep. Just clean slate, don't beat myself up. And then it just, again, it helps manage or damage control, basically. And you don't turn this like little thing into this massive, you know, 3 month issue of guilt and shame and regret.
Yeah. I find like a lot of the problems with success or no success for people is how they approach it, is their mindset, is their expectations. Like, not every workout's going to be great. And I had a message from a client this morning, and she was like, you know, I'm not feeling 100% yet, 'cause she's coming off like a cold, but she's like, I got in the gym yesterday, wasn't a good one. It was kind of half-assed. And I'm like, look, you got to the gym. To me, that's a win, right? 'Cause you could have not gone and then missed another one and missed another one. It's like those days where you just show up and do the work. That's what long-term fitness is. It becomes a thing where you feel great after the fact, you feel accomplished, you know, after you exercise, you always feel like a rush of positivity, blood's flowing. But while you're doing it, it's like, yep, okay, this is what I'm doing today. And it just becomes another one of those. And that's okay. That's the thing. There's nothing wrong with that. Not every workout is going to be an Instagram highlight worthy workout where you're just kicking ass and taking names. Like, that's not it. The amount of times down here where I'm just like tripping over my feet or like stumbling and struggling, and I'm like, my head's elsewhere. It's like, this just get it done. Just get it done. It's like, that's what it is. And then the don't miss twice, I love too, for food. It's like, if you have one meal where maybe you overindulge a little bit and you recognize that, the next meal doesn't have to be like that. The next meal can be one that's more in line with, maybe it's higher protein, maybe a little bit lower carb or lower fat, or just you're still meal to meal, still capable of making better decisions. So don't miss twice. I love for even within one day of eating versus not just like day one versus day two kind of thing.
That's a great point. Yeah. Mm. So like, you know, breakfast or lunch doesn't go well, or dinner doesn't go well, yeah, next meal you don't have to write yourself off for the whole day or the weekend or the week.
Yeah.
I'm glad that's a really good point you brought up.
Slippery slope. If I start the day off with a donut, I know lunch has to be, you know, a good hefty size of chicken breast or something with some vegetables, because I can't be doing that all day.
Yeah, totally. And I think it's a good thing as well. Like, you can just be like, okay, I'm gonna also, if you want to enjoy a donut for breakfast, that's awesome, because you've decided to do that. Mm. And then just being able to kind of course correct the next meal, I think that's a much more sustainable approach than, you know, all in, all out, which I think a lot of us struggle with.
Yep, 100%, man.
So the next one is Nutritional Framework from Dr. Peter Attia. And, you know, like, you're very much, you talk about nutrition a lot, and which is great, but like I tend to stay away from it because it's pretty tribal. You know, so I like this because there's no dogma. It's not like you need to be a vegan, you need to be keto, carnivore. It's just like, this is just a framework, and you can follow anything you want, but just follow the framework. So it's basically, it's called the three lever approach, and it's CR. So CR, DR, and TR. So CR is calorie restriction, which I know you talk about a lot. Like, people, you know, let's just say they're having 2,000 calories a day, and then they cut their calories by 200 calories a day, and they create a deficit, and then that's going to help them with their weight loss, their weight management, whatever, going forward. So that's lever number one. Lever number two is DR, which is dietary restriction. So you might restrict a part of your diet. You might cut carbohydrates. You might cut down on fats. You might cut out gluten. You might cut out dairy. You might cut out refined sugar or liquid calories. So just eliminating one of those parts of your diet will most likely incentivize a calorie deficit as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final one is TR, so time restriction. So for people, you know, intermittent fasting, is a lot of people have probably heard what that is. So basically you're restricting the time that you allow yourself to eat. So instead of eating, you know, morning to night, you cut it to maybe 12 to 8 p.m. You have your 1 to 2 to 3 meals in that time. So it just makes it harder to eat more food. So again, it creates a restriction. And again, it helps for some people manage their calorie intake. So he says, basically, always be pulling one lever. If you're eating however many calories you want of every single thing that you want all day, that's basically the standard American Western diet. And we can see how that's worked in the last 50 years, you know, chronic health issues, obesity, mental health issues, all of this. So always be pulling one lever. And for some people, calorie counting might be the way to go. For others, maybe eliminating, you know, a certain food group might work for them. And then for others, like time restriction might work. And then oftentimes he says, pull two levers. So you might do calorie counting and go off dairy, because dairy makes you feel like it upsets your stomach or it gives you acne or something like that. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, ad hoc, like 1 to 4 times maximum a year, you pull all three. And that might be where you do like Dr. Walter Longo, he's got the longevity diet, where you do a vegetarian restricted diet, like 500 calorie a day diet for 5 days. And that acts as like a longevity protocol that he says helps for longevity. So, or you might do like a 24 hour fast, or, you know, a 3 day restricted diet plan in some way. And that's something, and again, a lot of people mightn't be ready for that phase. Like that might be, you know, a double body weight deadlift or a handstand pushup. So that's for some people, but not for everyone. But everyone can kind of work on the first, at least pulling the first lever and sometimes pulling two levers.
I really like that. That breaks it down in a way I've never looked at before, where it's like, yes, there are different modalities and different strategies, but a lever, it makes it visual and it makes it easy, I think, for people to be like, okay, well, I don't want to cut out any foods or food groups and I don't want to count my calories, but I'm going to pull the lever and just time restrict, which isn't terrible, right? It's not, none of these are for everyone, right? Everyone's going to have their preference. I've seen, you know, positive results from intermittent fasting, and I've seen really negative ones where it's just like you're starving and you can't help yourself but eat everything in sight, which is counterintuitive to what you're trying to achieve there. So that's a really interesting framework. I really like that. And it's kind of, it's in what fitness should be, it's to the individual, right? At the end of the day.
Totally. And it just gets you away from like any sort of dogmatic, you know, responses or like, yeah, this is, you know, like I think John Berardi says as well, like, instead of saying what's the best diet, imagine asking what's the best car, which I think is a really great way of changing the conversation as well. So like, you know, for you, you've got two kids, a wife, I'm single guy. We probably need different cars. You know what I mean? Like,
unfortunately, you're right, sir. Unfortunately.
So it's a very, you know, or the, you know, the framework I give is like a middle-class family in California or Western Australia, they probably want a big SUV, you know, big, you know, and a lot of off-road stuff there. For a single guy in Rome or in Bangkok, you might want a scooter or nothing. You might just use public transport. So I think like getting people to like use that question for people tends to work well as well, because they're like, oh yeah, that's, they see how ridiculous it is telling everyone to have the exact same dietary approach.
Yeah, I like it. That's true. The best car right now is an SUV.
Yeah.
Best car when my kids are out of the house and old enough will be some sort of sports car for sure. For my wife and I. The answer will be different in about 15 years or so, 15, 20 years. Yeah, I love it.
And then the last thing is integration. So this is like getting people to understand how to do this long term. So the question I really like to, I ask all new clients is like, what can you show up and do on your hell week? And like your hell week is when, you know, relationships are compromised, you're sick, work is stressful, financial worry, and like the economy, you know, so like everything has just gone to shit. Like, so what can you actually still show up and do that week? Because, you know, I'm sure you are the same as me. When you, someone new joins the program, they're like, I'm going to do 6 days a week, I'm going to crush it, and they're super excited. But then just getting them to kind of think, okay, hell week is, you know, it's on the horizon, it's going to happen probably in the next 12-24 weeks. So when that does happen, what are you going to do that week? Because that's the week when you might skip everything and then feel like you've completely failed and throw out everything out the window. So people normally will say probably 15-20 minute sessions they can not really say no to. Mm-hmm. And we set that as their floor. So then I'm like, okay, regardless of if the world is burning, you can still show up and do 2 15-20 minute workouts. And it gives people a lot of relief because they realize, like, that's very manageable. And I'm not worried about them doing the workouts. I'm worried about them maintaining the habit.
Yep.
So they still, you know, and then when people start showing up for 3, 6, 12 months, at least twice a week, every week, you know, things grow exponentially, they compound, and they get amazing results. So that's, I find that to be a really helpful way of getting people to understand how to train long term.
I love that. Yeah, the hell week scenarios. It's, again, it's another visual thing. I think we're all kind of visual learners in a way. We love storytelling. So it's like, what would this look like on your worst possible week ever? It's true. It makes you think of like, okay, what can I do instead of what the average person would do? Is just everything goes out the window. You don't train, you don't eat properly, you stress out, maybe you know, indulge in too much alcohol, order too much takeout, and it becomes this thing where when you do have a week like that, it's really hard to get back to, you know, that structure that you had before that. So in this framework, looking through a hellish week, what the bare minimum is, like you said, it's consistency. It doesn't have to be the best week, but you're still doing a few things just to maintain a bare minimum before you can ramp it back up again when the hell weeks are done. Definitely. I love that.
Yeah, exactly. I guess invites people to understand that like life is never going to be optimal, and you just need to understand how to, you know, integrate this into your life. Because if you look at your relationships and your work, like if me and you start showing up, you know, half of the year, we're going to have pretty, you know, like our businesses are probably going to fail miserably, you know? Yep. And it's the same with like people's fitness. They're like showing up for, you know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, maybe 12 weeks, but then they take 3 to 6 months off and then they start again.
Yeah.
And you can't build anything. You can't have a relationship like that. You can't have a career like that. You can't have a fitness and you can't have health like that either. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just kind of educating people on that and also understanding that it's a difficult thing because the fitness industry has actually told people, no, you need to do 6 weeks of high intensity of 1200 calories a day. And then just dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's not sustainable and you're going to hate your life and you don't repeat stuff that you don't enjoy. So turning this into something that you enjoy will give you way better results long-term. And I think that's what I love about your message as well, is like, it's just meeting people where they're at and realizing like, hey, you've got a family, you shouldn't have to do an hour a day, 6 days a week and be hungry all the time, you know?
Yeah. It sounds miserable. The tough part too is like when people did something that was miserable, but they latched themselves onto the results or quote unquote results that they saw during that time. And they almost forget how miserable they were and they want to do it again because all they remember is like, yeah, I lost 10 pounds in the 30 days or 20. But I was like, but you were miserable the whole time. You had no energy. Like it wasn't a good experience. And if it worked, you would have kept the weight off. Like that's the toughest part, I think, for people. And I think I need to do this more because in Western society, I'd say the most, like, money's important. People are thinking finances all the time. I'd say people talk about the economy way more now than they ever have. You have to equate your fitness to your finances. Like if you want to chop down debt, you have to plan for that. You can't just, I'm just going to dump a whole money into it now, and then I'm not going to put any money onto it for months and expect the debt to go down. Your fat loss is the same. Or even if it's not fat loss, like your fitness, you have to make daily deposits. And you said it a few times, the compound interest. It's not exciting. If you look at your savings account, let's say in a savings perspective, and you're trying to save money, if you look at that savings account every day, you're gonna be like, this is a waste of my time. Mm-hmm. That's not the point. You don't look at it every day. You just make the deposit, put an auto deposit, whatever you're doing. Fitness is the same. You can't look at yourself every day and be like, okay, this is not doing anything. It's like, no, what did a month look like? What is 2, 3, 4, 6 months, a year? Then you're like, holy shit, like what a change. And same thing goes for compound interest with your finances. Like after over a year, you can save if you keep showing up, if you do the daily deposits. Yeah. I think for me, that's been one of the most eye-opening things is someone who struggled with his own debt in my stupid 20s, I'll call them. It's like, yeah, like if you don't put the effort in consistently, you're not going to see any positive improvement. Same thing goes for fitness.
Yeah, I love that way of phrasing it as well, because that's, you know, it's very easy to understand that. It's the same thing. Yeah, like just don't even like that. It's called like investing, like dollar cost averaging. You just invest every week, regardless of what's going on.
Yep.
And yeah, you just show up, you know, do your 2 sessions every week. Doesn't matter. Good, bad, awesome. Just keep showing up. That's it. And yeah, I think that's the way. Yeah, just kind of telling more kind of stories or analogies is very helpful for people to kind of understand and digest it as well.
100%, man. I don't like cutting it short. I do have to jump off soon, but this has been incredible. Like the way you brought the topics at hand, it does make things a lot easier to understand. And here I am, like I've been working out for 20 years, been in the fitness industry for a good chunk. Like, and even I'm like, okay, that's a new way of looking at things. So it's, awesome. I think that's good, man. Like as a coach, even if we have a particular population we like to work with, I think it's important to be able to say things so a lot of people can understand it, because let's face it, fitness education, nutrition education is not global at all. There's so many different perspectives and dogmas and frames of mind where it just makes it super complicated for the end user most of the time. Whereas we find everyone just, they go through something terrible. They hate it. And they don't want to pursue, you know, health or fitness and stuff like that. So the way you frame things, I think the audience take away a ton from this one. It's been super helpful for myself too. I love to ask people for a golden nugget, and you dropped a ton of great value already, but one last piece of advice for the audience on whatever topic you choose.
Yeah, I would just keep it super simple. So if you were like me and you, we played sports growing up, but if you didn't play sports, maybe you went to music classes or something like that. And they weren't like, okay, John, this week we're going to train at 7 a.m. Next week we're going to train at 9 p.m. And then maybe the week after 5 p.m. It's like, okay, hockey is on Tuesday, Thursdays at 7 p.m. every single Tuesday, Thursday. So that's just in your brain that like 7 p.m. Thursday is hockey. That's it. So I think the better people can get at like reducing decisional fatigue, and just know like, okay, this is in the calendar. If you use Google Calendar, I think that's great, because you can kind of adjust as you go as well. You can just lock it in, so it's reoccurring every week. And you might just say Tuesday, Thursday mornings at 7 a.m. or 8 a.m. I would recommend mornings for people, because as the day goes on, you'll get busier, more stuff will come in your way. And that's your kind of 30-minute block or 60-minute block. That's when you work out, or that's when you just show up. And even if you just go downstairs or go to the gym and you sit on the couch for a half an hour, it doesn't matter. You just need to every single week show up, or even just go for a walk. You know, it doesn't have to be 100 max deadlifts. That's, I think, really helpful, because the clients that are really like cruising in my program now, like one lady in particular, she's been training with me for like 5 years almost now, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 6 a.m. every single week, and she just shows up. And sometimes she's doing a great workout, sometimes she does a bit of mobility or goes for a walk, but like it's just, that's her routine, and that works for her. So I would just say that as a takeaway nugget, if you're trying to figure out when to put it in every week, it's not going to happen. So just, you know, really kind of try and get really clear with your times. Morning is going to be better, and I think that would be a helpful takeaway. That, along with the hell week as well.
Is a good thing. Those are huge. I love it, man. Yeah, awesome. Shameless plug time. Where can everyone find you, my man?
So Conor O'Shea Fitness, Conorosheafitness Fitness .com, or at Conor O'Shea Fit on Instagram, or Conor O'Shea on Facebook. I also have a free Facebook group if you want to learn more about mobility, rehab, and, you know, this kind of habits and sustainability stuff that I was talking about. So yeah, they're the best places to check me out online.
Awesome, man. I'll link all that in the show notes. Conor, my man, thank you so much for taking the time. It's been great chatting with you.
Awesome, man. Great to chat, all right?
Awesome, brother. Talk to you soon.
See you, bro.